save big money on plant protection supplies. Now at Menards. Defend your garden with Triazicide Insect Killer. Its fast-acting formula protects lawns, vegetables, and many other plants. It kills more than 260 insects by contact, above and below ground. Choose from ready-to-spray, concentrate, or granular. Save big money on Triazicide Insect Killer at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Getting real with women who inspire us. The three of us together have a lot of experience discussing real issues that affect real women. Now we're giving you a chance to actually hear how we talk about the topics in the newsroom behind the scenes here on the Oklahoma Women Want to Know podcast.
On this episode of Oklahoma Women Want to Know, we're talking about a disease that makes life really difficult, but thanks to recent medical advances, at least it's treatable. We're talking about hemophilia. And today in studio, we have two ladies that are going to tell us what it's like to live with it and to treat it and how their lives are affected. We'll get to them in just a moment. But first, I'm April Hill. I am the midday anchor and news director here at 102.3 KRMG, Tulsa's News and Talk.
I'm Jen Townley. I'm co-host of the KRMG Morning News with Dan Potter.
And I'm Crystal Kelly, a reporter here at KRMG.
Okay. If you could introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, my name is Katie Mears, and I have severe factor VIII deficiency hemophilia A.
And I'm Carrie Crabtree. I'm the interim executive director of the Oklahoma Hemophilia Foundation, and I had a brother who had severe factor VIII deficiency hemophilia A.
Okay. All right. So tell us a little bit about when you were diagnosed, how this all started.
I was misdiagnosed first when I was about two with a different type of bleeding disorder, which is called von Willebrand's, because I was a female, because I'm using air quotes. You guys can't see it, but I am. Because females didn't, quote unquote, get hemophilia. That's a lie. So then I was correctly diagnosed at the age of six. So that was 1985 or 1986. So it was like 1986, 1987. I fell off my neighbor's bike. I was bleeding internally a whole lot. And so I kept taking naps. My mom said, well, Katie doesn't take naps anymore. So that is a problem. So they took me to the hospital, and my pediatrician ran some tests that nobody had thought to run. And they found out that I did indeed have severe hemophilia A, which that means I have less than 1% clotting factor of factor VIII. So my body can't really form a clot when things, you know, when you fall off a bike or you sprain your wrist or you twist your ankle or, of course, there's, you know, you cut yourself pretty good. There's that as well. But most of the things tend to be, slamming into the side of a door. I like to do that a lot. And then your shoulder swells. So, that's when I was diagnosed. And I started receiving treatment in, it was either 1986 or 1987.
You were napping a lot. Do you bruise when you have hemophilia? Could you see that there was under your skin that there was something going on?
So it depends. So when I fell off my bike at six, the big one, I landed on my back. So I was bleeding internally. I had a hematoma internally. So I don't remember if I had a bruise on my back or not, but a lot of times when you have what we call a bleed, which is the internal bleeding, you don't bruise necessarily. But say, for instance, I was riding my bike. I fell off, landed on my knee. That happened a lot. You know, you're a kid. So my knee would swell. It wouldn't necessarily bruise, but it would start swelling and it would get really hot. And it would, my mom, when I was little, I'd say, Mom, it feels like it's pounding, like someone, because it was a heartbeat of pain. So my mom would go, was it pounding? Because it would just be like pain, pain, pain. And it would get swollen and hot and it would pound, as we called it. And that's how we knew I had a bleed, because the blood is rushing in there and my body can't form a clot to fix it. And so it can't heal. It just keeps swelling and swelling. And so that goes in there and starts damaging your synovial lining and everything like that. And it's just bad for you. So joint, that's called a joint bleed. But plenty of times I got bruises for sure. I always was bruised on my legs. I mean, I still often get bruises and no idea where I've got them from. You know, that happens all the time.
That happens to me too.
Yeah. And that happens to a lot of people. And that's not uncommon at all. But I think a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the actual bleeds we get where we have to infuse our medication is not necessarily what you can see.
That must have been so scary for your parents.
Yeah.
Were they really cautious with you and kind of overprotective about things like that?
You know, a lot of it, it's hard to remember because I was the kid, but I mean, absolutely, because, you know, they had this daughter. I have all these pictures with black eyes. And, you know, there were all these pictures of their, you know, daughter with bruises all over her body. I remember I was a ghost for Halloween one year and I had a mouth bleed. So I just bled through the sheet, but we were like, well, authentic. It kind of adds to it. Yeah. So no, it was awful because they had my older sister, Lindsay, and then I was born. I was the first biological child, and hemophilia does not run anywhere in my family. In fact, it was a genetic mutation. And then my body also worked off the bad X chromosome instead of the good one. So that's called skewed X inactivation. So my body really wanted me to have it. So it was a lot of coming from out of nowhere and them trying to figure out what the heck was happening, me getting misdiagnosed, this being the 80s when there was not, like, the treatment options, you know, were low. And then, of course, HIV and AIDS and all those things with the blood supply and with our hemophilia factor supply. So I can imagine that it was terrifying. I was the kid, and it was pretty terrifying for me too. But, you know, they had to just divide and conquer. One stayed with my sisters because I had to go to the hospital every time I had a bleed, because that's where I'd get my treatment. And I don't know, they just did it because that's just what you do when, as did a parent.
Is that what Ryan White had?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Did they ever have to deal with, like, accusations of child abuse and stuff like that? Because you see bruises on a kid.
Yeah.
That's your first thought.
You know, and that's a really good question. I've really never asked them about that because I kind of don't necessarily want to take them back to that time because it's probably pretty terrifying. Mm-hmm. But I am sure that they were overly questioned multiple times in hospitals. When I was, I think, about 7, we went to California to visit my uncle and cousins, and I had an ankle bleed. And I needed to get treated. So we went, this was, you know, the 80s. You couldn't, like, really contact people on through email or through the weekend, you know, whatever, back in Oklahoma. And, you know, we were like, hey, she needs to get this, you know, this cryoprecipitate, which was the medication that I was receiving. And they wouldn't do it because they said girls didn't get hemophilia. Wow. And they kept us waiting and waiting. And again, I was a little girl. So I do have vague memories of that because the pain. But, you know, they didn't want to treat me because it was, they acted like we were making it up and my parents didn't know what they were talking about.
Like a Munchausen almost.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, which is funny because I was a teeny little kid and I think it was either my ankle or my knee. I think it was my ankle. And I mean, it was pretty obvious because I'm sure it was massively swollen.
You keep saying that everybody said girls don't get hemophilia, but there's evidence all the way back, like you said, to Queen Victoria, mm-hmm. that girls do.
Well, girls are carriers of the disease. So it comes from the mother, but they don't present, generally speaking, they don't present with hemophilia. So it's a predominantly male disease historically. So it's really rare for Katie to be a hemophilia living with hemophilia. I mean, a female living with hemophilia and then also living with severe hemophilia, because usually if it's a female that has hemophilia, they present as mild, generally speaking.
And I know we're jumping all around, but I hate to forget my questions. You were going to the hospital to be treated after you had a fall or an injury. Do you take medication every day for this, or is it only something you take when you have to treat something?
So things have changed, right, since the 80s, of course. Mm-hmm. Back then it was treat on demand. You'd hurt yourself, you go treat. And again, there were at the time I was getting what was called cryoprecipitate, which is a big hanging bag of, like, whole blood, right?
Yeah,
it was basically.
Yeah, it was frozen plasma.
Mm-hmm. Stuff. Yeah. So then you'd sit there as it dripped in, which is real fun for, like, a 6-year-old. But as when I got older and they, you know, got clean factor, which is the factor 8, what we call it, I was able to be infused at home. And so it was on demand, but, like, if I was going to go have a dental procedure or something like that, I would infuse beforehand. Now, I still infuse on demand with my factor 8. However, I'm also on a different drug called Hemlibra, which is... The factor VIII you inject in your vein. Stick, pop a needle in your vein, put that stuff in. Factor VIII goes all over and helps your body clot wherever you need it. The Heme Libre, and I'm going to mess it up medically, but however it, I use the term fools. It doesn't really fool your body into thinking, but I am not a medical professional, so I don't care. It fools your body into thinking you have factor levels between, I believe it's about 15 and 20%. So that lasts for a couple of weeks. So I do that every 2 weeks, and then I have my factor VIII at home in case I do have what we call a breakthrough bleed, in case my ankle's hurting and swelling, something along those lines. So, but there are many people that do it several times a week, and Carrie can actually speak better to that because I know David was on prophylaxis, wasn't he?
No. But when my brother was alive, my brother passed away in 1996. But when he was living, he treated on demand as well. That was the protocol. They didn't really start treating prophylactically until probably the 90s, I think, is when they started changing that protocol, and now it's a lot of people that have hemophilia, they'll treat every other day or every 3 days or something like that. And then with Heme Libre, a lot of people are on Heme Libre now. And then, like Katie said, that like fools your body into thinking your factor levels are at a acceptable level, I guess. So,
when you have a dentist appointment and you know you might be poked around and bleeding a little bit, you take the clotting medicine that helps you ahead of time. So it's just there already. So that way, yes. So that's something you could do. It's like
I would infuse ahead of time for something like that. Like I had major surgery on my liver 2 years ago, and they just dumped all the factor into me all of the time for like a week and a half. If I was going to have a small dental surgery or something like that, that's not a big deal. I'd infuse my meds at home, go have my surgery, maybe infuse a second time, maybe not, kind of depending on what it was. But like bigger surgeries and things like that, there's a big protocol.
So how did it go? Did everything go smoothly? Or?
The liver surgery?
Yeah.
It was supposed to be laparoscopic. It was not in the end. My surgeon said next time he gets a patient with hemophilia that he knew what he was going to do. And I said, what? And he ran out of the room. And I was like, all right, thanks, Dr. Cho. He was wonderful. So it didn't go according to plan that way, which more just meant that I was in the hospital a little bit longer. I was on FMLA for 2 months. So whereas that would be a traumatic surgery for anyone, for me, it was worse. I had to get a PICC line that I kept. I don't know if you guys know what those are. Basically, it's like an IV that goes into a vein in the middle of your arm and right by your aorta, which was amazing. But that way I could infuse my factor. They could take labs. They could do all of that. And they could stay in for weeks. And I didn't have to stick myself with a needle every day. So that was great. So the surgery was as successful as it could be. They cut out about 15% of my liver, which was 3 tumors. But it was a big deal. With hemophilia, you add that in there where this person, especially in a real bloody area of your body, is not going to clot. My doctor was like, we're probably going to put you in the ICU the day after. And they did, you know, just to be sure and to make sure everything was stable. But I'm very lucky because I work really closely with my treatment center that I've been going to since I was 6. And I don't do anything like that without all of the doctors talking over and over and having a plan that is printed out that I have with me. So it went as well as could be expected.
And so how does this affect your personal life? Did you get married and did you have children?
I did get married. I married at 37. We do not have children. There's probably an age part and also a hemophilia part to that. But personal life, man, dating with hemophilia, that was fun.
So what was it like? What can you give like an example of, say, oh God, I have to go and deal with this right now.
I got a good story for you.
Give us the juicy stuff. Give a bad date story.
Yeah. Okay. This guy, what was his name? I don't even know. He wasn't that cute. It's fine. I think it was Halloween. It was Halloween. And this guy I'd liked finally asked me on a date, and we were going to go to dinner, and then we were going to go to a Halloween party at his friend's house after. And I was like, okay, great. This is exciting. So we go to dinner, and we're walking out, and he's trying to be silly and does that thing where they kick their leg up and kind of kick you in the butt, because I guess he was 12. I don't really know. Yeah. So he does that, but he knocks me down and I go sprawling. Oh yeah. And that's not cute anyway. But I was like, I landed on one of my knees and I was like hard. I kind of caught myself on my leftovers. That was also nice. And I was just like, okay. And this was probably, I don't know. I mean, this may have been 15 years ago. So I was in my late 20s and I knew I needed to go home and infuse, but I didn't want to, because then I had to have that conversation. And it was just our first date. And I didn't know him well. And I didn't know if he'd even be interested in hearing about it. Because that's just not really first date talk for the most part, for me anyway. And so I remember, because we had had our Halloween costumes, so we went back to his house and changed and went to the party. And the whole time I am in horrible pain and I'm just faking it because I just wanted to be normal and go to a party. I didn't want to have to be well, I have to go do this and blah, blah, blah and cancel. And so, yeah, I never went out with that guy again. He turned out to be an idiot, so that's fine.
But what did you do, though? Were you able to hold off on getting this treatment? I'm like, are you going to, could you die?
Sounds like he wasn't worth it.
He was not worth it.
Was the party fun?
I wasn't going to, no, the party wasn't fun. His friends were losers. What? Okay.
great, no, all around.
I wasn't going to, it wasn't head trauma, you know what I mean? However, it's not great because the blood is rushing in there. You're in pain. It's damaging your joints. It was not a smart decision, but it was also just a decision I decided to make so that I could live like a normal person that night.
When you were young, we all make stupid decisions.
It was really dumb. And, it was fine. I went home and infused. The problem with that, though, is it prolonged how long the bleed lasted. So I was in pain longer, and I had to infuse another time. And, when you got a big swollen knee, you're not running around. I own my own pair of crutches and a sling. So I was, laid up with ice and resting and all that stuff for longer. And, but dating, you had to, if you dated someone for a little while, you had to kind of figure out, do you bring it up? Do you wait until you feel like it's going somewhere? Does something happen that causes you to tell them early? I dated a lot. Oof, online dating, the worst. But online dating when it was kind of new, so it was double the worst.
Yeah, because everyone judged you. Oh, yeah, I met my husband online. Yes. I get it.
No, and it's great. I think I have so many friends that did that, but it was just like, how and when do you reveal that?
Profile.
When did you reveal it to your husband?
My husband, I think it was our first date, actually. Well, we met at a bar. We were introduced by a friend. She didn't know him, but her husband was good friends with his uncle. And so we met at a bar, and then we went on a date, I don't know, a week later maybe, and I don't remember. I do have a memory of sitting at the bar before getting dinner, talking about it, and I remember bringing it up, and I don't remember why, and I don't remember how, but maybe because we had kind of mutual people in common. I don't really know, but I think I got to the point as I got older of just kind of laying it out there in a timing that made sense, depending on what we were talking about, because I've counseled at our camp for hemophilia, kids with bleeding disorders for the Oklahoma Hemophilia Foundation since I was 19. I went to that camp. So I have those causes that are really near and dear to my heart. I'm on the board of the Hemophilia Foundation. So a lot of that kind of stems from me talking about me and then kind of leads into why I do that.
So how did he react?
He was fine. I think he was probably just like, oh, okay. And he asked questions. This was, almost 9 years ago this month, actually. I'm sure he had questions. He asked questions, and then things kind of became revealed as I had my first bleed with him. We'd been together 9 years dating, and then my liver surgery was 2 years ago, and I could not have gotten through it without him because he took care of me.
He's like, really? Now we got to do this?
I know, right? No, he was amazing. He took care of me. He was there every step of the way. Anything I needed.
He's a keeper.
Yeah, and he helped me. When I had to infuse first time when we'd been dating for a little bit, I was like, hey, do you want to sit down and help me? Hand me supplies and stuff like that. And he was like, okay, sure. So I stuck myself with a needle and he put the syringe on the end and pushed the medicine.
Oh, so romantic.
So romantic. Yeah. I was like, it was very romantic. To me, it was very romantic.
To you. Yeah, it was sweet.
It was great. Yeah. And he's really just never wavered or had an issue. He was just like, okay, whatever.
Right. So Carrie, back to you, your brother had hemophilia.
Yes.
When was he diagnosed and what was it like as a sibling to deal with that?
So he was diagnosed. He was, I was only three, so the timeline may be a little iffy here, but I'm pretty sure he was like 7 or 8 months old. They first knew that there was a problem with him when he was first born, because he was circumcised, he would not stop bleeding. And
that's terrible.
They couldn't figure out what was going on. They thought maybe that they just cut too deep or something. And so they ended up having to stitch him to keep him from bleeding. And then when he was started to get mobile, rolling around, started crawling, all of that, then he started showing up with a bunch of bruises. He had bruises all along his rib cage from banging into the side of his crib, things like that. So you mentioned, had anybody ever accused of abuse or anything like that? So a relative of my mom said, you know, what's going on with him? He looks like somebody has abused him. I mean, she knew that it wasn't the case, but she was like, this looks bad. Like somebody might say something. And so my mom immediately took him to the doctor, because she was like, this is terrifying. And they took him to the doctor, and the doctor ran a bunch of tests. They at first thought maybe it was leukemia. And then when they got the results back, the doctor said, good news, he doesn't have leukemia. Bad news, he has hemophilia. And I know everything I know about hemophilia, it was on one page in a medical book that I learned in medical school. Mm. Did not know much about it, but sent him to a specialist. You know, they just went from there. But my parents had, like Katie, we had no family history. My mom was tested after my brother was diagnosed, and she was diagnosed as a carrier. And then they tested my grandmother, my mom's mom, and she was also diagnosed as a carrier. But she had 5 children. None of them had any history of bleeding disorders. None of their children had any. And my mom's oldest brother has 9 children, and nobody in that family has a history of it. But
was it the disease that took his life?
So yes. Well, hemophilia did not take his life, but he was a victim of the AIDS crisis. So because of the tainted blood supply, he contracted HIV, and he was 19. He passed away in 1996.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So you are a part of this organization now. Tell us about the organization, what you guys do, and how people can find you.
So we are the Oklahoma Hemophilia Foundation. We are an advocacy. Our mission is education, advocacy, and support for people with bleeding disorders. So we don't just, it's not just for people with hemophilia. It's also people with von Willebrand's disease or other rare bleeding disorders. We welcome them all, and we advocate for medical change. And like we're getting ready to have a day at the Hill where we go and talk to our legislators about issues that are affecting our community. That's coming up in February. We have a website, okhemophilia.org, if you want to learn more about us there.
We're on Facebook.
We're on Facebook. So we are just here as an advocacy program and an education program. We have lots of different education opportunities for people. We have a big annual meeting every year for everybody in our community. We have people from our hemophilia treatment center come, and we have speakers that come and talk about advancements in treatment and things like that. So,
are there support groups out there for parents or caregivers?
We do a little bit of that. We like what Katie was talking about with our summer camp program. That's kind of, it's not really for the parents. That's for the kids, but that's an opportunity for kids to go and be with other kids that have bleeding disorders and know that they're not alone, and they can be like Katie said, quote unquote, normal kid for a week, where they get to do all of the things that, you know, a lot of times they don't get to do because of their bleeding disorder. So they get to, you know, do fishing and archery and, I mean, what else?
Camp stuff.
All the camp things.
Like sports, the water stuff, all the fun things.
Right. And our treatment center personnel is there. So
right.
the parents are more
medical
comfortable
staff
because
there.
Their actual doctors and nurses
right.
and
exactly.
physician assistant are mm-hmm. there.
And when my brother was young, there wasn't really anything like that, and that it was kind of a new thing. So he started going to camp in the early 80s. He went to camp, and there wasn't really a support group or anything like that. So the foundation really helped my parents, you know, kind of navigate this area where they were like, we don't know what's happening. Like, this is, you know, all new for all of us. So, you know, it was a really good organization to kind of help them so that they could talk to other parents that were going through the same things and know that they weren't alone.
Well, this has been really informative and eye-opening. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your stories. And we'll see you next time on the next episode of Oklahoma Women Want to Know. Make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
Thank you for joining us once again on Oklahoma Women Want to Know. Tune in each Wednesday at 5 a.m. for the latest episode. And don't forget to drop us a review.
Save big money and transform your home with new appliances now at Menards. We offer the lowest prices and the largest in-stock appliance selection ready to take home today. Check out top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Upgrade your home and save big money on new appliances at Menards. Shop our entire selection of appliance options online today at Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.